Hi, everybody. I'm Carrie Diamond, host of Radio Cherry Bomb. You're listening to Super Women, Super Foods, the first ever Radio Cherry Bomb miniseries. For Super Women, Super Foods, I invited some women who I've admired from afar to share their stories and tell us how they incorporate wellness into their lives. We spend a lot of time on Radio Cherry Bomb talking about work, but none of us can be as efficient or as effective as we want if we're not taking care of ourselves. Women often spend more time taking care of those around them and neglect their own well-being. First, before we get to our guest, let's thank our sponsor. This episode of Radio Cherry Bomb is brought to you by Elemis, the number one luxury British skincare brand that's just launched in the U.S. Elemis knows that what's good for your body is good for your skin, so feed your skin what it craves with their new superfood skincare range, available exclusively at Elemis.com. You can get 15% off your first order with the code CHERRY, C-H-E-R-R-Y. I want to do like the Runaway song, but CHERRY, you know how to spell that. It's so funny what you find out from Instagram. I posted a picture from the Elemis launch party for their superfood collection, and our friend Crystal Mack, who you've heard on the radio and who you have probably seen on her Instagram a lot and who was in the Martha Stewart issue of Cherry Bomb, she commented that she trained with Elemis back when she was in aesthetic school and that she loves the papaya enzyme peel. So thank you for the tip, Crystal. I'm going to have to try that product next. Speaking of aesthetics, the guest of this episode is someone I've wanted to interview for a long time, Athena Calderon, the founder of iSwoon. iSwoon is all about living well and paying attention to, yes, aesthetics, whether it's your food, your table, or your surroundings in general. Athena's first cookbook came out this fall, and it's no surprise she titled it Cook Beautiful. It's filled with page after page of sumptuous dishes, picnics, tablescapes, kitchens, and more. You'll want to make every recipe in there. I got to know Athena a little better last year when she wrote a story for the last issue of Cherry Bomb about female chefs who have mentored and taught her over the years, like Jodi Adams and Anita Lowe. In reading it, I realized that Athena is an incredibly gracious person. Her family and friends mean the world to her, and she's very honest about her imperfections and insecurities. We had a great time talking in the studio, and I hope you enjoy our conversation. Athena Calderon, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, we've wanted to get you on the show forever.
I'm so happy to be here.
So we are very happy to have you on the show. So congratulations on your book. It's not a brand new baby. It's not a newborn anymore, but it's still a new baby.
Yes.
Cook Beautiful, which came out in the fall.
Yes.
And tell us a little bit what the book's all about.
So my background is in interior design, and I've always been a super visual person, but food just kind of took over my life, like it often does for us lovers of kind of Epicurean creations. And, you know, I started iSwoon, which is a blog that kind of combines both food and design and all things visual and beautiful. So when I had the opportunity to create this book, cookbook, I really wanted to make sure that I was melding my two worlds of food and design. It's a cookbook first and foremost, and it's, you know, about seasonal cooking and local and sustainable and supporting our local farmers, and about flavor, of course. But I also wanted to kind of arm the reader with little tips and tricks about how to elevate the presentation of their food. And I'm not talking about like something really fussy like in a restaurant, but just, you know, little things about plating or ways to, you know, making sure you're shocking your vegetables after you blanch them to make sure they retain their like bright green color, you know, so just small little tips about how to make your food look beautiful, because our eyes are our first sense that kind of lures us into a meal. And I think beauty elevates the ordinary personally.
Well, the book is so well named, Cook Beautiful. And really, when you flip through each page, everything is so incredibly beautiful. And you write in the introduction, my true passion is creating beauty.
Yes.
How did you become that gal?
I've always been a super creative
person. Were you born that way, Athena?
Well, maybe I was born that way. I have to say that it's my mom. Mm-hmm. I like hold her in such a high regard. You know, I have memories of setting the Thanksgiving table and it just being like a ritual and a celebration and, you know, kind of I don't know, just loving all of those small moments, even decorating the Christmas tree. And my mom would always rearrange the furniture in our home. So I just think, you know, she was so chic and elegant and really cared about how things were presented in our homes and setting the table. And, you know, I didn't know that this was being kind of through osmosis kind of given to me. But I think that I, you know, I tried so many different kind of creative endeavors in my 20s, and I didn't really know where it would land.
Oh, we have to go back to your mom before we get into all of that. Because okay. I loved what you wrote in the book about, it seemed like a real homey home. You know, you grew up in a big Italian family.
I grew up in a big Italian family in Long Island.
Pasta was called macaroni.
Macaroni, yes. And, you know, mozzarella.
Did you have red sauce or gravy?
Red sauce. Mm-hmm. It was always red sauce. Fried meatballs. I mean, grandmother every Sunday with, you know, glasses around her neck with chunks of meatballs, you know, catching on her glasses. And I mean, we would all gather, a big Italian family, on Sundays and on holidays, and kind of food and I say this in the book, but just like food and family were synonymous. And it was always about laughter and boisterous energy and just a lot of people, a lot of love, a lot of heart, and a lot of carbs.
And like you said, you know, that all through osmosis just became what you're all about. And I think that's really, you know, you can look at this book and be like, ooh, this is fancy, and look at I Swoon and be like, ooh, Athena's pretty fancy. But I think you're, I don't know, when people get to know you, I think that warmth comes through so strongly, and it's not a surprise that that's how you grew up.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's something I think about often, and especially lately, about not wanting the overly perfect presence of things to, you know, block people from feeling like what I do is accessible. And I've actually started this series on my Instagram on stories called I Swoon Unplugged.
That's your version of the Pinterest fail?
What's the Pinterest fail?
Oh, you don't know what a Pinterest fail is?
No.
Oh, come on. It's like when you try to make something look like it looks on Pinterest, and then it just winds up, it's like a hideous mess when you do it.
Got it. No, this is just me cooking for my family. Unlike,
it doesn't surprise me that you don't know what a Pinterest fail is.
That's so funny. I guess I don't. Anyway,
so wait. So what do you call it? I Swoon Unplugged?
I Swoon Unplugged, okay. A dinner series. Mm-hmm. And it's, none of it is thought out in advance. It's literally me cooking for my family. I have a shelf in my kitchen, and I just put my iPhone over it, and I hit record, and I just go through each step. And it's just kind of, sometimes I talk through it, sometimes I don't, but just trying to make a beautiful plate of food still feel accessible by showing people, like, there's no fancy editing, there's no, like, you know, pretty smiles and, you know, pretty plates. It's just me cooking.
I mean, like we were saying, it is easy to look at I Swoon and look at the book and think it's all about perfection, but you're very honest about your journey and how you got to where you are. And it was not an easy path
It wasn't. I'm overly honest at times, but I do think that when I first started doing what I did, when I first started I Swoon, I should say, one thing that people would always say to me that really kept me going when I didn't really know what I was doing is, I love what you represent. I love that you can be more than one thing, because that is what held me back. I mean, I didn't start I Swoon and really find my career until my mid-30s. So while, you know, I'm really proud of where I am right now, I didn't always know where I was going to land. And at times that was confusing and depressing. And
you wrote about it beautifully for the last issue of Cherry Bomb. And it sounded like you had a lot of moments of self-doubt, and, you know, you saw other people your age doing things, and, you know, you couldn't help but compare yourself to them.
Yeah.
You also were a mom at a very young age.
Yes. I got married at 23, and I had a baby at 26. So I hadn't really figured out career before I really jumped into being a mom. And, you know, I didn't have a fancy life, and I didn't have a nanny. You know, it was just me and my baby and my husband, and we were figuring it out. And I chose to be with my baby. And, you know, my husband travels a lot, and we went on the road with him. And Traveled all around the country with this little baby. Probably why I breastfed for 2 years is because he was just on the road with me all the time on planes and it was easy. But maybe that's too much information.
No, we love stuff like that. And you dabbled a lot.
Tell
us some of the things you I don't even like that word dabbled because that implies that you lacked seriousness. But as you were trying to find, you know, what represented you professionally, you tried a lot of things.
I did. I studied dance in college, and then I moved to New York City because I wanted to be an actress. I did some modeling, a little bit of acting. Then I, you know, got into singing, and then I decided I wanted to get into interior design. So I went back to school and went to interior design school. But all the while, I really loved cooking at home, so I started to go to cooking school. So I mean, everything I, you know, put forth with a ton of passion, but I did feel kind of less than because I wasn't really succeeding in whatever that word actually means at one particular thing. I didn't even know at the time how to write like a very, you know, like a professional email. I never went through that ladder of corporate world of really
internships and all those things,
public speaking, you know, I mean, none of it. I didn't have any of that. And it made me feel confused.
Did you have anybody to talk to it as you were about it as you were going through that? Or was this just all sort of in your head and you were dealing with it best you could?
I mean, I talked to my husband about it, of course, who like is literally my greatest supporter ever. Like he's just like, great, you want to go to culinary school? Awesome. Like, I get to eat good. But he's always supported me. But I was in my head a ton. And there were even times where he was like, babe, is everything okay with us? And I'm like, it's not us. It's, you know, you have a successful career. Like, I don't. And I just worried that I was going to, like, start reaching 40 and always feel like I never succeeded or found, like, what it was I was meant to offer this world.
But then magically, all these things that you were interested in just somehow gelled.
They somehow gelled. They did.
And you started an interior design firm, right?
I did. I started an interior design firm after doing my own homes. and I had a business partner, and we took on clients. And, you know, that was a huge learning experience for me. I felt really, you know, proud of myself finally. But as those years were kind of building, I was always cooking. When I was feeling down and out, I would seek solace in the kitchen. And I would, you know, like I said, my husband travels a lot. So a lot of times I would be home alone. I would put Jivan, who was a baby at the time, to sleep. And I would like pump up the music and roll out pastry or, you know, just start experimenting with flavors. And I see this in the book too, but like Brooklyn was having such a renaissance of restaurants like Franny's and Aldi La. And I was like coming home and like trying new techniques and, you know, pickling things and just obsessively reading Epicurious and reading reviews. And I just threw myself into food. I had so much fun. It was as a creative that didn't have an outlet, food became my outlet to kind of riff and play and trust myself and, you know, explore. And then it became first a creative outlet, but it also was giving me purpose, but then it became a social outlet too because I would invite people to my home for dinners. So as I started this interior design business, I was also kind of hosting these, you know, just small dinners at my house that were just, it sounds corny, but like they were feeding my soul.
What was the aha moment when you decided to sort of combine both loves and do you start a Tumblr? Is that how
I started,
you started
Tumblr? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had just renovated a house in Amiensit, and I had so much design advice to offer and friends that were coming over for dinner parties at that house and seeing the house for the first time. They would be asking me design advice, but then also asking me for my recipes. And then I was just like, oh, well, maybe I'll just start writing these down and, you know, on a Tumblr blog. And I literally I reserved, I think, like 30 to 40 different names on Tumblr. Yeah, and
tell us some of the rejects, if you can remember.
Swoon Dinners, local ramblings. I don't know. Like I was playing. I don't even remember, but I still get like a 1 year anniversary.
And so did you buy all the URLs?
I didn't buy the URLs.
Oh, you just reserved them on Tumblr.
Yeah,
that's so funny.
I just reserved them on Tumblr. I should probably let them go. but iSwoon was one of them. And
it's such a good name. How did you come up
thanks.
With it?
Thanks. My business partner in interior design at the time would always use the word swoon a lot. And I just liked the word. And it was just a play on words because I'm really visual. And a lot of it at the time, when it started, it was a little bit more design. I guess it was kind of 50-50. I think now it's more food than it is design, but now it's turned into entertaining actually a lot. But it was just the things my eyes swoon over. And because I'm so visual, it just made sense for me.
Well, it's such a fun word because it didn't exist.
It didn't
in the English language before, and you put these two words together and now it's a thing.
Oh,
which
thanks.
Is so much fun. And it's
fun.
And you totally get it when you say iSwoon. You're like, oh yeah, of course. I see something and I swoon over it. So there you go. The food, you don't put yourself out there as like a nutritionist or a healthy food guru, but I couldn't help but notice as I went through this, everything in there is pretty healthy.
Everything's pretty healthy. I mean,
does it reflect how you've always eaten at home?
I think that a lot of it is a lot of Mediterranean flavors, like bright, clean flavors. And I think travel really inspired me a lot and going to kind of Italy and Greece. But also, you know, as I started cooking more, I became more and more educated about supporting our farmers and, you know, eating locally. And I think that was another huge reason why food really captured me was I was growing, I was learning, I was expanding, I was meeting new people and learning from them. And, you know, every time I would cook with a new chef or a different tastemaker or somebody that was like-minded that loved to cook, I would learn a little bit from them. And but going back to like the healthy eating, I think that we eat a lot of vegetables in my family, but I also eat a lot of red meat. I eat a lot of pasta, but I think that I don't cook with a lot of butter. Actually, when I went on the cookbook tour, I ended up cooking with Chef Ludo in LA. And he told me I was cheap with butter.
I'm with him. I cook with a lot of butter.
You do?
Yeah, but butter's not bad anymore.
That's true. Butter's not bad.
I'd rather cook with a ton of butter than spray my pan full of Pam or something.
Ugh. Yeah, that's true.
I always cringe when like people whip out the Pam. And
yeah, it's pretty bad.
Pam won't be sponsoring the show anytime soon.
Oh my goodness.
That's okay. Do you feel like you're eating healthier over the years as you become more educated about food and ingredients?
I do. I'm super mindful about making sure that I'm always, including vegetables. Even like being a mom too, I think, especially being a young mom, I've always been trying to find creative ways to have my son always eat veggies, and I'm grateful that he still does.
And you break the book up by season. So
yes.
Are you a big fan of eating seasonally?
I am. And I think living in Amagansett and so close to so many farms and having that tight-knit community and, you know, kind of going there and seeing the whole process and, you know, harvesting your own vegetables and getting your CSA, it really makes you realize you absolutely should not be eating, you know, tomatoes in winter.
There's that wonderful farm in Amagansett, Amber Waves.
Yes.
Do you know the farmers there?
Oh, my God. Amanda and—
Aren't they great? Katie?
Yes, Katie. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're incredible. And they were huge supporters of the book. I filmed a lot— I shot a lot of the spring chapter there.
Oh. I mean, I know we have listeners from all over the world out there, but if you ever find yourself in Amagansett, it's a wonderful small farm. It's really interesting because I think when we think of farms, we think of these like big sprawling places, but it's only a few acres, right? And it's just so beautiful, and they really encourage you to walk the property, which is so nice. And now they own the farm stand in front.
Yeah.
And you could pick up your CSA boxes there, and they sell a lot, and it's worth battling the traffic for.
Agreed.
During the summer when you're out there. So let's talk about wellness in general, because you really project this aura of calm.
Oh, goodness.
I mean, I don't know what you're like behind doors, but
not calm.
And I have said to the team that I think you are one of the nicest people in food and food media.
You're so sweet.
Because again, Carrie, when you wrote that story for us, it was really, really beautiful. It was about how different female chefs have influenced you over the years and what you've learned from them. And it was so graciously done. And I really appreciated that you took the time to sort of tribute to these female chefs and really reflect on how much we learn from each other. I just thought it was really special. And you came through very much in the story in a way people don't always come through.
I think because
when they write something.
Yeah, I think because I struggled to find my way, that once I found this food community and these women that were so open to, you know, some of these chefs that were just so open when I said, oh, can we shoot a story together for iSwoon, that they would allow me to enter their kitchen. I would enter a complete stranger and walk out with a new friend, more knowledge, you know, better technique.
Feel free to name drop because we love our female chefs.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Jody Williams, I absolutely adore.
She has Bouvette.
We did an event together at Laura and Fabio's farm, Westwind Orchard, upstate. She was the first female chef that I did something with that I was just in awe of her. But Anita Lowe. And
Missy Robbins,
Missy Robbins is our mutual favorite. She captures my heart.
If you haven't been to Missy's Lilia in Williamsburg, you have to go.
Oh my goodness.
Probably my favorite restaurant right now.
100%.
Yeah. Even though I shouldn't be picking favorite restaurants because I love all your restaurants, all of you out there listening. But I live close. I'm a subway right away. So
yeah. And Malia Martin. Mm-hmm. And
from the Smile and the Smile to Go.
Yes.
If you have not gone to the Smile to Go, I keep meaning to beg her for this recipe. She does a quinoa banana muffin, and I'm not a muffin girl at all, but it is a magical muffin.
Oh my goodness.
I don't know how the hell she does it, but it's so fantastic, and just the fact that it's quinoa in it is so, I don't know, I just find it kind of funny.
That's great.
But I digress. So you are so calm. You radiate this aura of calm and centeredness, and I'm just curious how, you've got a lot going on. How do you stay so calm?
Recently I've been trying to stay calmer because the whole cookbook tour, as you know, was not very calm. I've really been trying to instill rituals into my life, simple things, because sometimes when I, you know, kind of overarching, kind of broadband ideas, I don't always meet those goals and then I feel let down. But every morning, I've been waking up around 30 minutes before my husband and son, and light a candle, light some Palo Santo, and just kind of sit with myself. Sometimes I meditate, but usually I just kind of like sit with myself before I like dive into making coffee and before I dive into like looking at my Instagram or my email. I just like carve out that sacred time for myself. And I mean, could I be doing yoga or could I wake up even an hour earlier and like take a workout class? Probably, but this just feels really grounding and calming for me. So I don't know, getting my son off to school, even though he's 14, just still feels like a bit of mayhem and trying to wake him up. And now that we're on three floors, I like to wake him up and we have this intercom system and I'm like yelling through the house. So anyway, it can be a little hectic in the morning. So I just take that time for myself. And I've also been making tea for myself every night before bed. And I just like the morning and the evening of just like taking back some time for myself and having something that feels a little ceremonious, even though it's nothing extravagant. It just means a lot.
Walk me through your personal tea ritual.
I mean, it's not.
You grab a tea bag and some hot water.
Yeah, and
call it a night.
Do you have a tea ritual?
You know, I do have tea almost every night. I do not have a ritual. I used to just put a mug in the microwave, but I'm like, you know what? Boil the water.
Yeah,
like,
I boil the water.
Make the effort. And I have chamomile or I have peppermint, and I've started to pay a lot of attention to brew time. Because chamomile, peppermint, you really need to brew for like 10 plus minutes. And then green tea, which I don't have before I go to bed, but green tea, you just need to brew like 2 or 3 minutes and that's it.
You're way more professional than I am.
I think I had been overbrewing my green tea forever. And that's why I was always like, oh, green tea is so bitter. But then I went to this place called Samovar, getting a nod from the engineer out there. Mm-hmm. Then I went to this place called Samovar in San Francisco.
Okay.
And they have the most beautiful tea. And I just paid attention to how they did this green tea that they served. And I thought it was like the best green tea I'd ever had. And yeah, brew time. Who knew?
Who knew?
Do you work out? Do you
do yoga?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Didn't you study yoga at one point?
Yeah.
I was trying to remember everything on your list of things you had studied.
Yeah, I studied yoga, mm-hmm. and I used to, I mean, I was pretty hardcore yogi 5-6 days a week. And
wow.
Yeah, I was pretty limber, and I love yoga. I don't get to go as much as I would like to, but every time I do, my body just literally screams with joy. It's just, it's so meant for my body and makes me feel really centered. So more yoga. I haven't found one in our neighborhood that I like.
I don't do yoga, so but I do want to be that person who does yoga. So, but there's no shortage of yoga studios.
Yeah, and I just have to find the right
that
one.
Right one.
Yes.
Another big component of wellness today is taking a break from all these gadgets, and you hear so much now about tech detoxes, things like that. You are very much a creature of the internet. You've got your blog. You've got your wonderful Instagram.
Yes.
How do you deal with detaching, taking a break?
I'm not the best at it. I haven't figured out the balance. I just went away for the first time in like 2 years with my family, and I really didn't pay attention to my social media and it, or work for that matter, and it just felt so good. But I don't do it enough, and if anybody has any tips, please let me know. but sometimes, like today, I haven't posted on Instagram, and then the end of the day happens, and I get really anxious, like, oh, I should have. This algorithm is kind of driving everyone a little crazy, but I don't know. I try not to, like, get too hung up on it. If something's not obvious to me, I'm not going to force it, I guess.
And how about your beauty routine when it comes to wellness and beauty? What's your thing?
I've been taking a lot of baths, and I've been trying to change over to a lot of organic products and natural products. I mean, I'm not a spring chicken, so as much as I want to use organic, I also want to use things that are going to make the fine lines, not...
What kind of chicken are you? Are you a summer chicken? You're definitely not a winter chicken.
I'm a... what do you mean?
No, I don't know. I'm just making that up. Because spring chicken implies you're like, you know, super young.
Right, right, right.
You know, so I guess winter chicken would be, I don't know, like...
Super old?
Our grandmas, you know.
I'm a fall chicken.
You're not a fall chicken. I'm going to put you at late spring, early summer chicken. How about that?
Okay. Can we talk about the chicken? Can I ask you, in your book, was chicken the most well-received like it was for mine?
Wait, that's so funny that you say that, because in the beginning, you know, so the Cherry Bomb cookbook is 100 different female chefs and bakers and pastry chefs. And so many of the first batch of recipes that we got were chicken recipes.
Oh my goodness.
I was like, oh my God, this is going to be an entire chicken recipe. I used to work at Yahoo Food, and we had this little rule, when in doubt, run a chicken story, because
right.
people were just obsessed with chicken.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I think maybe a 4 or 5 chicken recipes out of the 104 or whatever it wound up being. How about you?
I have 3 chicken recipes in Cook Beautiful, one for spring, one for fall, one for winter. And the fall, I mean, fall and winter have gotten the most traction, obviously, because the book came out in fall and now it's winter. But the fall one is chicken breasts, whole chicken breasts on the bone, but it's with shallots and dates and green olives, so in like a buttery tart sauce, and it's roasted, pan roasted, and the shallots kind of melt in your mouth, and the sweet dates kind of counteract like the olives, and it's a really good recipe, and I was hoping it would be well received, and it really was.
Oh, it sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's
really
good.
I'm going to have to make that this weekend.
It's a good one.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back after a word from our sponsor, Elemis. It's time for a superfood fact from Elemis Skincare. Goji berries are all the rage for topping a smoothie bowl or swirling into yogurt or oatmeal. These bright red dried berries are rich in vitamins C and B, minerals, polysaccharides, and many other bioactive compounds that can help smooth and plump your skin with moisture for a healthy-looking complexion. Goji berry extract is just one of the nutrient-dense ingredients you'll find in the new superfood skincare collection from Elemis. Why not nourish your skin? Pick up your superfoods exclusively at Elemis and get 15% off your first order with the code CHERRY. You said you love baths now.
I do love baths.
Do you put any product in your bath? What kind of bath do you like?
I like to light a lot of candles and I put Epsom salt sometimes, but I'm not super fancy. But baths are again me like taking back some sacred time for myself. So it's I usually have a magazine, a decor magazine usually, and low light and music and just me time.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
Yeah.
Any beauty secrets? Anything you always do or have always done?
I mean, I love dry brushing.
Oh, that's a good one. Talk about, a lot of people don't know what that is.
I only learned about it when I did a cleanse, like my first cleanse back in the day, but it's just a dry brush that you kind of rub over all of your skin in like a circular motion, even like your belly and your breast and your butt. And it makes you feel more alive. It kind of helps with your circulation. I don't know what other benefits.
I have a dry brush and I love it. I don't do it every day because I don't always have the time. Sometimes I like have to hop in the shower like a crazy person and just get out really fast. But you're right. I mean, you feel incredible after you've done it. And I think you're supposed to do it like toward your heart or something. I sometimes cheat and don't do it that way necessarily, but most times I do. And you're right. You feel incredible afterward.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Yeah.
I haven't done it as much recently, but I'm going to break that baby out tonight.
Let's talk about food some more. Tell me a few favorite recipes from the cookbook.
Let's see. There is a roasted beet and blood orange salad over a bed of yogurt with tarragon, which is kind of my favorite herb as of late, tarragon and hazelnuts. And it's been super well received. It's a beautiful dish, but it's a tasty dish. And it's also hearty for somebody that's a vegetarian. It was literally got the most likes of any Instagram I've ever had ever. And I posted it twice. I don't remember why. And both times I was like, oh, maybe this should have been my cover.
It's funny. I noticed that when I was going through the cookbook, and that was another one I flagged because it's citrus season.
Yeah.
And citrus is so good for you.
It's so good for you.
Oh, my gosh.
It's so bright.
And I love blood orange, whether just like squeezing it into seltzer or putting it in the salad or something. And you have a dressing recipe back here. I'm not sure if it's in there, but it's a yogurt tahini.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so easy. I, for some reason, just never thought of combining yogurt and tahini.
It's really good. That's the dressing that's on the kale salad, which is really nice.
Just walk through how do you make the yogurt tahini dressing?
Oh, you know, one trick, I don't even think that this is in the cookbook, but when you are kind of whipping the tahini, you know, sometimes it can get really clumpy, but if you put ice cubes in it as you're whipping it.
Really?
Yeah. So it has lemon.
Doesn't make it too watery?
Doesn't make it too watery, no. It has lemon and garlic, tahini and yogurt. And it really came about because the tahini, you know, I had this idea. I didn't want to make another like typical kale salad. So I just thought that the tahini would make it stand out a little bit. And when I first made the dressing, I felt like it was just a little too kind of pasty and sesame-ish. And I didn't want to thin it out too much by adding more lemon or water. So the yogurt just made it kind of really creamy and silky.
That's great. So, everybody loves tahini right now. It's definitely
everybody loves tahini.
And this tahini moment.
Dukkha that I what recipe is that in? It's so bad. But this dukkha recipe, people are kind of freaking out over. I'm putting it like it's become this breakfast thing. Like,
talk about what dukkha is.
Dukkha is a bunch of different nuts and seeds and different spices like cumin and coriander, sesame seeds, and it's just kind of really aromatic and chunky. I put it in the creamy cauliflower soup with a little bit of watercress pesto, and because I just, with something creamy like a soup, I like to have a crunch to kind of counteract that. But the dukkha, just like thrown over some labda in the morning on bread or over eggs, like soft-boiled eggs, is really nice. And it's just an unexpected texture and flavor that kind of, I don't know, elevates.
I don't know whether it was working on the cookbook for so long and just having sort of food exhaustion, but I find that for the past several months, I've just been eating a lot simpler, but trying to elevate simple food from being boring. So doing things like someone had given me some dukkha that they had made, you know, just like you said, putting that on yogurt in the morning, or just broiling some fish or slow roasting some fish and then putting lemon zest on it, or, you know, just some chopping up some preserved lemon, just going for like really bold flavors, but using them in really simple ways and elevating really simple food.
That's kind of a bit of the cornerstone of my like cooking philosophy, is a lot of the dishes that I make are like simply grilled or, you know, pan seared. But I'm like, I'm a saucy girl. Like I love a salsa verde and I love some sort of relish or gremolata. So I think that you can really enliven your food, especially in like more muted flavors in winter, by like creating even there's the swordfish recipe that is in the book, and I was going to make it last night, but I didn't. And I've just sliced lemons quite thin and roasted them and then chopped them up whole and put some vinegar-soaked raisins that have a little bit of heat. So it's kind of this raisin and Marcona almond and chopped up roasted lemons. And it's just so nice to put over any piece of, you know, grilled fish.
Or anything.
Or anything, yeah.
Roasted lemons is something I'm obsessed with now, but I didn't really know about it until we interviewed the two chefs, the Sarahs from Kismet in L.A. They gave us a recipe for a roasted lemon soup with chicken meatballs and pine nuts. But you literally cut the lemons in half and roast them until they get kind of puffy, and then you juice them.
Oh, my goodness.
And they get all caramelized. And I don't know why I'd never thought of that before. I'm sure every chef and better cook than me out there is rolling their eyes, because it's not like a secret. But it's such a great trick.
I do that in my whole roasted chicken, which before I wrote Cook Beautiful, I wasn't a whole roasted chicken girl, and now it's like a game changer in my house. But I do cut in half lemons, garlic, carrots, and shallots, and just toss that with a sumac-covered chicken. And the lemon, it almost, once it's roasted for that long and at that high heat, it almost feels like a preserved lemon when you squeeze it over. It's so good.
Right. And you can eat the whole thing.
Yeah.
Which I love. No, I'm super into roasting chickens these days. Do you get them spatchcocked or butterflied?
I don't.
No.
Maybe I have to. I love my butcher in Brooklyn.
Which one do you go to?
Della Pietro's on Atlantic Avenue.
Oh, okay. That's the fancy butcher.
They cost a fortune. But they're so nice.
I go to
nice.
The slightly less fancy butcher around the corner from you. But they're great. But I still can't say the word spatchcock with a straight face when I go in there and say, can you spatchcock this for me? Maybe it's the influence of the Hemsley sisters, but they were really the biggest proponents of bone broth forever.
Oh.
And now I'm obsessed with roasting a chicken and then making broth or making stock right after. I'll roast it, take the chicken off the bones, and make the stock while I sleep.
Ooh.
Because you want to cook it for a long time, but I'm never home for 12 hours.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah. So at least you get it in for a few hours before you go to bed, leave it on while you're in bed, but then I like worry that the kitchen will explode. But it hasn't yet. And then, you know, you have a few more hours in the morning.
Yeah.
Because the longer you roast it, I mean, the longer you cook the stock, the better. Again, no big secret. But I'm making all these different discoveries.
I love it.
And because it's the winter and I love ginger so much in the winter, in addition to the carrot and the celery and the onion and the stock I've been dropping in, you always have that odd knob of ginger in your fridge.
Do you refrigerate? I don't refrigerate my ginger, but I had a conversation with somebody about this the other day, and they were like, yeah, of course.
Oh, okay. I refrigerate it, but I won't judge you for not refrigerating your ginger. But you always have that odd knob of ginger, and you're like, if I don't use that ginger, I'm going to have to compost it really soon. But you can just, like, cut it up and throw it in your stock. And the same with lemongrass. If you've got just, like, the odd stalk of lemongrass kicking around, you can drop that in your stock pot as well. And preserved lemon. I read something recently. Someone drops a preserved lemon in there. Huh. But I guess you could put a regular lemon.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I put a whole lemon in my chicken soup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So why not?
Why not?
Why not? So what's next for you?
What's next for me? I would love to do a product line that combines my love of design and food. Maybe a tabletop collection. So I'm exploring that. And I'm about to work on book two, which is not food. It's an interior design book. So just starting to think about heading back into bookland. My new cooking series.
What's your new cooking series?
The Icewind Unplugged.
Right. Yes.
No, it's not really a cooking series. It's just, I've kind of, you know, the going through the cookbook, and to be perfectly frank, I wasn't cooking a lot when I was, you know, I was under a renovation as well as the cookbook at the same time, and I wasn't cooking a lot. So now I have a new kitchen and I'm cooking a ton more, and I've kind of like reclaimed my love of cooking, and I just want to kind of share in video form just the mess that I make and the yummy creations that I make. I'm a sloppy cook.
Are you?
Yes.
That's funny, because I was going to ask you, I love entertaining, but I will use every dish and pan and utensil
in my
kitchen.
And then they're like stacked up really high. I know. And when I did a culinary program, you know, they're so militant about, you know, cleaning up your station. And I was hoping that I would carry that home with me, and I didn't.
No, I thank the universe every day I have a dishwasher. Athena, one thing I'd love to ask you about is the connection between a beautiful surrounding and wellness. And you are such a master at creating beautiful surroundings. How does that contribute to your state of well-being?
I mean, I've always believed that, you know, creating a beautiful environment, creating a beautiful meal, setting a beautiful table, you know, feeling beautiful is connected to your environment and your well-being. And I don't know, maybe other people feel differently, but for me, when, you know, my home is something I feel really proud of, it makes me feel rooted and grounded and connected, and you know, there's a connection. There's a connection when you see a plate of food that you absolutely think is beautiful and alluring, and, you know, it does make it entice you and make you, you know, savor it more. And I just think, you know, how your surroundings and how you feel outwardly can, not in a vain way, but just, you know, in a proud way. You know, I've created this. I mean, one of the things that I love with what I do, it is creating beauty, and I love kind of poring over all of those details. It's something that brings me great joy of, you know, when I cook and when I create a tablescape. And so for me, it just brings me pure joy and happiness.
So tell us some easy ways to make your surroundings more beautiful.
I think that it can be quite easy to add, you know, greenery in your life. It doesn't have to be super expensive. You know, having a plant, something green in your life, I think really kind of adds to your home. I think, and this sounds really silly, but, you know, don't use paper napkins, and instead, like, you know, buy beautiful linens, or, you know, we sleep on our beds and spend more time in our bed than any place in the world ever in our lives. Like, we spend so much time sleeping. So, you know, invest in your sleep habits and have, like, you know, nice bedding and a cozy pillow. And, you know, dim lights are really important, I think. You know, you don't want everything to be kind of bright and jarring. So I think that there's, like, a lot of small things that you can do to make your immediate environment
beautiful.
Do you have
everything on a dimmer?
Everything's on a dimmer.
And it's not so hard. I mean, I don't think I can do it, but I've seen people install dimmers. They're not the hardest things in the world to install.
No. And TaskRabbit, you can hire somebody to come change.
Forgot about TaskRabbit. That's right.
That's really good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're a big candle girl. I know that.
I love to burn candles. And, you know, I would never tell people to, like, go out and buy kind of fancy plates and multiple plates. But, you know, I think that, you know, when you have dinner, even if you have takeout, like, set the table, you know, put out nice napkins and light a candle. And, you know, I know that I've said it before, but create some sort of ceremony around, you know, your gatherings. I think that when we're seated around the table with our family or with our friends, it's kind of those moments that are purest, you know, like there's such connectivity and laughter and joy, and breaking bread with the people that you love is what builds memories that we hold on to forever. So, you know, make it an experience, even if it's takeout.
I love what you talked about earlier when you said you're trying to create more rituals for yourself.
Yeah.
And along the same lines, traditions. And yes. I think, you know, so many of us don't live close to our families anymore. I have a girlfriend who just moved out to San Francisco by herself, and she's just making new friends out there. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with creating rituals and traditions for one either. I think so many times we think it has to involve family and friends and coworkers and all these things, but there's so much you can do to take care of yourself as just an individual and come up with your own traditions.
True. And, you know, you said it before, sometimes we just rush in and out of the shower, but just, like, take a moment and make it something sacred for yourself. So I'm working on it. I'm not saying that I'm, like, really good at it and that I'm succeeding at it, but, you know, we're all a work in progress, so.
That's a great place to end. We are all a work in progress.
We really are.
A constant renovation, right?
Sometimes we succeed and sometimes we don't, but we learn when we don't, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. What is your superpower?
What is my superpower? When I first started in design, my business partner used to call me the super sleuth because I am relentless. If there's something that I want, if there's something that I'm after and I'm told no, like, just don't tell me no, because I will figure out a way. I will find it. I will search it down and just figure it out. So I think persistence is my superpower.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Thanks.
Now, if you could have any traditional superhero superpower, what would it be?
Traditional. I wish that I was able to step into a room and create calm and compassion and connectivity. So many of our world's problems are just that, you know, people aren't acting with a heart and with compassion. So I think if you can get people in one room and just have their hearts soften just a little bit more so they can hear one another, the world would be a much better place.
I wish you had that superpower.
Me too.
Thank you for listening to Super Women, Super Foods, our mini-series about wellness. And thank you to Elemis for supporting Radio Cherry Bomb. It's time to feed your skin. Pick up the Elemis Superfood Skincare Collection exclusively at Elemis.com and get 15% off your first order with the code CHERRY. This episode was engineered by Dave Tatasciore. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and Heritage Radio Network. Before we get together again, I have one question for you. What's your superpower?